Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talked to a guy who started rockin' when he was just a kid.
Great! I love Frankie Lyman. All right. On the deck.
Yes, on the deck.
It's in the sun. It is hot.
It is
now officially DC area summer.
Yeah, it's summer. We're in the middle of summer. We kicked everything off with summer songs last week. And
right.
So yes, I can officially agree with you that it's summertime.
So we are rocking the heat of the suburbs on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And this here, if we can get this audio, is Jim's beer.
Yeah, it is.
It didn't work very well, but listen to this. Maybe this will be
good. Yeah, I think this will be good. What do you got going there?
I don't know
if
you can hear that much, but I wanted to, I don't know if you've seen this particular label before.
I'm familiar with Star Hill.
Star Hill out of Charlottesville, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that label?
Ah, look at that. Heavy Rotation Warehouse Pills. That's beautiful with the 45 with the old plastic yellow insert there.
Yeah, I called it a spacer. Does that sound right?
I think that's right.
I don't know.
Makes your big hold 45 play on a small spindle. Yeah.
So I had to pick this up when I saw this at the store.
Love it.
I thought it was perfect for the show.
I'm working my way up to that.
All right. Yeah, are you dragging a little bit today?
Yeah, I'm drying out a little bit today. It's been a long weekend.
Ah, so this definitely helps with the heat and humidity.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And the new umbrella that we just got.
Yes, new umbrella here on the deck is fantastic. It's solar powered, so I'm sure everybody's going to enjoy that.
Does that give us more heat?
Yeah, it might.
No.
Yeah.
It's got the little lights in there.
It's got solar powered lights.
Okay. So here's what we're going to talk about. Finally, I think some of the fans who follow us on social media know that we did this a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
We interviewed Tommy Stinson.
Tommy Stinson, right, when he was in town to play with Bash and Pop at the Songbird in Washington, D.C.
Yes, our thanks to the Songbird. It's a great club. It's only been open for not too long. I don't know, a couple of years maybe.
Right.
It's a relatively new club on the D.C. scene. They've done a really nice job with it, the way it's a performance venue and a bar and cafe and record store.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Adams Morgan area.
That's
if you're from D.C. or in the area, go check it out.
It definitely has a really cool indie vibe to it, right?
Without
a
doubt.
And the basement performance space adds to that, too.
Yeah, it's got a really cool kind of, almost feels like the basement of a frat house or something when you go down there, right? It's got the sort of the bar in the corner and the little low stage and some poles.
The low stage is constructed in such a way, like it's sort of an L shape, so that the drummer has to be sort of in the back and off to the side,
But Otis Day is in front, and some of the knights are around the corner.
And Tommy did mention during the show that, you know, he seemed fine with it, but he did mention that he keeps looking over his, I guess, right shoulder, expecting to see the drummer, but he's on the left side because of the way the stage is constructed.
It's almost
in
another room.
Yeah.
It's a weird room. But interestingly enough, talking of Public Access TV, when we interviewed those guys, or two of them, right, and the main guy, we interviewed them upstairs in an interesting room that the Songbird has, which is one of those places where you can go in and record your voice, and it actually comes out on a 45, on a record.
On a record, right. So it's an antique voiceograph.
Yes.
There are only a few of these still in existence, still in operation in the U.S. We talked with co-owner of Songbird, Alicia.
I think that's right.
A little bit when we were just there, and she told us the story of how she got in there. I'd like to have her on sometime, and we can talk about
that. She would be great.
I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Talk about running a club with her husband and how that all works.
And as you recall, when we went to Third Man Records in Nashville, they have one there, but there's apparently only a handful of these around.
You know, Jim, I was thinking about this not too long ago. You know how some people have that sort of bucket list of visiting every major league ballpark? Maybe our thing can be visiting every voiceograph in the United States or the world.
So as you mentioned, for people who don't understand what we're talking about, these are antique machines that were made decades and decades ago. I want to say like the 20s, 30s, 40s in that era.
That's right. Before the advent of easy, you know, recording where you, you know, nowadays we carry a little recording studio around in our pockets with our right. phone. But back then it was, you know, it was, there weren't many ways to get your voice recorded. And this was the, filled that need.
Right. And it was almost like a picture, people are probably familiar with like a photo booth where you go yep. in, you put your money in. And you go in and it takes pictures. In this case, you put your money in and you get a certain amount of time and you can record your voice. Mm-hmm. Or if you, you know, brought with you a guitar or whatever, you could right. do that. I think it's just a single microphone situation.
Right.
But it puts it right on a record.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's really this really cool novelty kind yes. of thing. But back in the day, that would have been...
pretty common, right? You'd find them in maybe a... yeah. drugstore or you
yeah,
know
I think at like tourist attractions yeah, and things ex- like
exactly.
that
exactly right? There used to be one at
record
the Empire
record your own voice
right at the Empire State Building. Apparently you could go up there and like record your thoughts on looking over from the top at New York City.
And what people don't realize is, you know, back then this would have been even in the era before what we grew up with, like tape recorders
yep.
that you would have. This would have been in the era where like you never would hear your own voice.
No,
back like not so that all. Was that would have been a really unique experience yeah. to put your voice on a record. Get one shot, one take.
That's right.
You better get it right. And then hear it back. Like, yeah. that would have been a really.
It's amazing. The seminal thing, I guess, being Elvis, like recording a song for his
right.
mom's birthday or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. So the reason why we're talking about all this is yeah. because they have it in a little booth in the
they
corner.
Do. Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, not necessarily soundproof, but it's padded, you know, so
yeah.
it reduces a lot of the outside noise.
Yeah.
I think the only thing we could hear when we were in there was like a siren going past. It has
That's
to be
right.
something like that.
Yep.
But when we interviewed Public Access TV and it was in the wintertime, it was
nice.
Such a great little spot. we sort of sat on the floor and we recorded and it was really nice. And we thought, this will be great. We'll come
Perfect.
Back and do this again sometime.
Yeah.
We did it with Tommy and it was about 100 degrees
yeah.
in that booth.
That's one thing we didn't plan on,
yeah.
the fact that there's no air conditioner, obviously for sound reasons, right? You can't have like air going on and off while you're trying to record. So
That's
but we
right.
did it. We soldiered through.
We did.
Tommy was a good man.
He talked with us for about 20 minutes. At one point you hear him reference how hot it is in there. The other impact that it had just was it became sort of a rapid fire interview.
That's
it wasn't
right.
really
mm-hmm.
like a, you know, slow casual conversation.
Yeah.
We knew that the time was limited before we were just gonna like burn to death.
That's right.
We had to get out of there. The new Bash and Pop album is called Anything Could Happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he was on tour, sort of supporting that.
Yep.
As you mentioned, of course, best known for his work in The Replacements. And also, he was the bassist in Guns N' Roses.
That's right. Guns N' Roses, a little band you might have heard
the
of.
The reconstituted Guns N' Roses
yes.
that he was in for like 18 years.
That's right.
It's mostly as a touring band.
Yeah.
They did record one album. He talks about that in a portion of the interview that I think you're going to hear tomorrow.
Yep.
So anyway, let's kick this off. You'll hear a little bit of Anything Could Happen,
mm-hmm.
the title track from the record. Then you're going to hear some Tommy Stinson. So, Tommy Stinson, thank you for joining our podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate
yeah.
it, man.
And let's start with the obvious place. First of all, what are you drinking?
It's a pale ale.
Nice.
Yeah, it felt refreshing. It's so damn hot out
I
there
know.
Right now.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's going to be hot in this little recording
DC.
Booth. So
yeah.
yeah.
we'll
yeah.
move it along.
Looks like
we'll
it's
going to
steam
quick.
Up there, too. It's got some nice clouds happening.
Yeah, we need that.
Yeah. So, yeah, what's
okay.
what do you got?
So, obvious question.
Uh-huh.
Bash and Pop, which we're very excited is back together
mm-hmm.
or in a new form together again. Is that always sort of like post replacements therapy for you?
Well, yeah, I guess to a degree it might be, but I think, you know, it's so long ago that I started to make this thing happen. that it's finally now happening. It's a weird thing. I mean, I decided to call the record Passion Pop because it was done in the proper fashion that the original would have been done, which was mostly live, mm-hmm. as much as we possibly could do without losing fidelity. And since we started this record out, it's just been kind of, everyone's been thinking it just sounds like the old record, this, that, and the other thing. And so having gone with it, I'm getting radio airplay and stuff like that. You don't really, you know, can't really balk at that, you know. It's kind of a lucky thing, you know.
How would you compare this from when you were doing solo records?
Solo records are more time-consuming and a pain in the ass because you're kind of playing, you're wearing too many hats, you're, you know, overthinking stuff, you're, you know, playing all the stuff and trying to get your, you know, your ideas out there. When you got a band, you got other guys helping to achieve what is ultimately the biggest part of the process, which is getting the song out, figuring out what that's got to be. It's a lot easier to do that with a band.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you write these days, Tommy? Is that a thing where you sit down in the morning after breakfast and carve out like 2 hours and do it? Or is it just when it comes to you, it happens?
Yeah, tough question. I don't really have any particular way. Something will come to me at any point in the day. Mostly lately, though, during the school year, because I have a 9-year-old.
Right.
It gets a little tough. It gets a little bit tough to find the time. So mornings end up being kind of the place that I get the start on a new song. Mm-hmm. And then when she goes to bed in the evening, I'll finish it up.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. It's the get them to school, and you got those couple hours, and you got to get them back home after school,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. How is your daughter doing?
She's great. She's up. She's with my neighbor friends, the Hamiltons. The wife is the mayor of Hudson, which is where we live.
Right.
And they've been really good buddies for 5 years. So when I travel sometimes, I'll leave her over there with them because they'll go to school together and hang out and stuff. So
fantastic.
It works out good. Yeah.
And dad can't be on the road for too long of a tour these days, right?
Well, I'm trying to work that out because this is also how I make my living. So I got to figure out the delicate balance of being a full-time dad and a, you know, traveling musician.
Does she ever come on the road with you?
Yeah, in the summer she does.
Oh, she likes it?
Yeah.
Is she going to get started in music at 11, 12 years old like you?
I don't know. I don't know what she's going to get into. I mean, she is already a funny kid in that she likes to sing and she likes to dance. She doesn't like to do it in front of people. She'll do it for me, you know, and she's always, always making up songs and singing in the house. So I don't know what way the bend is going to be, you know?
Is it something you would encourage?
My 27-year-old, you know, asked me when she turned 16 if I'd show her how to write songs. So we sat down and showed her how to write songs, and she still wants to get in it too, and she's been working hard on a new record. You know, you got to encourage them. If they want to do something, let them do it. You got to be honest with them. Let them know what the chances they're going to get as lucky as I've been and all that are pretty slim. I mean, it's a tough world out there. There's a lot of music happening. There's lots of different ways it's happening to either work or not work. And if you got the tenacity for it, by all means, hit it, you know?
Yeah. And you were kind of in a different spot, too. I mean, you credit with music with really changing your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I would have, without music, I probably would have been in jail, Grand Theft Auto or murder or something. I still may go to jail for murder, but if it gets any hotter in this booth, it may happen today.
Maybe the end of our podcast right here, Jeff. That's right. You think it's harder now, Tommy, to make it in the age of streaming than it was when you started out?
I don't know. I've thought about this tonight, and I really don't have any one thing to go on, really, to say it's either harder or not. I just think it's different, and I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's different in a great way than it used to be. I think that, you know, it's still being figured out, and I think a friend of mine, Peter Jesperson, told me years ago, he's like, it's always been changing. It's always been, moving in lots of different parts. And being altered by, you know, trends and societies, you know, ups and downs, things like that. So, I think that in some ways it's probably easier for bands to, like, put their first record out on their own, start getting in a van and get out there and just pump the pavement. You know,
right.
It's all we ever really did. I mean, we made a record, got out, toured until we finally got lucky and started building a little name for ourselves and stuff. So, you know, it's hard to say.
Yeah. At least nowadays you just push people to your Bandcamp page instead of right to the 7-inch or the LP outside.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. all that crap.
Okay, that was the first part of the interview. We're going to take a little break right now, and then we're going to come back. You're going to hear more from Tommy Stinson.
Sounds good.
Patrick, you like to surf the internet, as they say. Surf the web.
I do like to surf the web. I dial up on my modem, go through my AOL account, and when I'm set, I like to surf the web.
Yes. I like to use CompuServe as my...
Yeah, that's nice. We have to put that CD in and install everything. Yep.
Yes. And one of the sites that I like to visit is called Slicing Up Eyeballs.
I love that website, Jim. It's a very unique music website that covers a lot of classic, well, what we consider classic music, right? From basically 80s college rock. We had an interview with the guy who, Matt Sebastian, who kind of runs it and is the founder. And really, I think listeners of our show will love everything pretty much that's on this website.
It's great. It starts off with you go to the site and you see a selection of cassettes lined up here from like The Cure and New Order and the Pixies and
Meat Puppets,
all that stuff, right? Public Image.
The.
The. And then you go down and you see all these great articles that Matt has written about these great bands, but sort of like what they're doing today.
That's what I love about it. It keeps you really informed on when they're putting new stuff out, like reissues, when they're playing, you know, if a tour is coming to your town, what's going on? And here's a unique interview. And speaking of unique interviews, we actually have launched a little partnership with Slicing Up Eyeballs.
Yeah, right. So as you're listening to this Tommy Stinson interview, we made that available to Slicing Up Eyeballs sort of raw and uncut before we did this show.
Yes, we did.
And so the listeners who wanted to sort of hear the whole thing before we kind of get our hands on it and edit it down, you can do that there.
Yeah.
And Matt was great to work with us on that. So what we wanted to do was really highlight his site here as well, because there's so much to offer. I mean, just as I'm looking at it right now today, Patrick, to give you a sense of the breadth and depth of this website, it goes from Bob Mould to The Fall to My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult to The Smithereens, you know, on and on, Tones on Tail. I mean, you know, The Cure, so many great bands, and you can read about what they're doing today and also the, like, flashback stuff they've done in the past. It's really cool.
Yeah, I like Dean Wareham to play Galaxy 500 today in San Francisco, one time only performance. That's a great piece of news I probably wouldn't have seen elsewhere. So.
Right. Yeah. So we love working with Matt. We love his site. Check out slicingupeyeballs.com. I want to get back to the songwriting for this record, because I understand that at least a couple of these songs started out as possible replacement songs, right? And
well,
what happened with those?
I mean, what was an attempt to make a replacements record was really done pretty half-heartedly. I mean, we wanted to try it out and get into a studio and see what we could come up with. And I think ultimately, you know, the reason why it didn't happen is I just don't think we set ourselves up to do that. I think we approached it half-assedly, and it didn't work out half-assedly. Some of these songs, I had some of these songs back then. We recorded a couple of them. they're still there. I don't think they're ever going to come out in that fashion or not. I think it would be kind of pointless at this point. And I think Paul just doesn't. I think his thing is, I think he doesn't really want to have to compete with the legacy anymore. I think he's kind of like past all that and rather just kind of move on.
When you're writing songs, you know, obviously you work with one of what people consider to be one of the all-time great songwriters. When you're writing songs, do you hear him whispering to you, or do you find it hard at all to sort of carve out your own voice with all that influence you've gotten over the years?
Not really, because I don't really worry about having that stamp in my musical background. I mean, it's, you know, I'd be foolish to try and pretend that I didn't sound something like the Replacements because I was in the band.
Right.
You know, and had a lot of same musical tastes in that regard. So, you know, you're going to sound a lot like the band you grew up with no matter how you slice it, unless you really take a left and start writing disco songs or something. And I'm not really into that market, you know.
I hear a little more country influence in this record. There were some in the first Bash and Pop record, but I hear even more here. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I honestly have no idea where that came from. I think it came from more of a need to be able to play shows on my own. And I was like, well, I got to kind of figure out a way to make some of these songs translate by just, you know, myself and acoustic guitar. My Uncle Chip and I, we did this thing called Cowboys in the Campfire. He's actually my uncle-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
By divorce, sadly.
Removed. Yeah.
But no, he you know, he's kind of a country guy, kind of a rockabilly guy, and him and I play and write a lot together. We wrote the title track of this record, Anything Could Happen.
Mm-hmm.
We've written some songs in the past records that I've made, and there's some of that influence, I think, probably from him in there, possibly. But I think it's just kind of a weird natural progression thing. I don't really know why, but it is.
You work with Paul and Axel. What kind of band leader are you? Are you different than them, or how do you handle leading Bash and Pop?
Jeez, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Maybe that's when we ask the other guys, right?
Axel's pretty straight up, you know, to work with. I mean, he's only, you know, difficult if people are difficult with him. I mean, I think that Paul's a little more cantankerous, I think, just as a human.
Is that right?
It's a little bit kind of hard to, you know, he's hard to get, you know, get going on things. And, you know, if he doesn't want to do it, sometimes you got to do things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
Especially in this life.
Part of the business. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And our thanks to Tommy Stinson for that. That's the first half of the interview. We're going to play for you the second half tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was great that Tommy took a little time before his show. That you saw, and we'll talk a little bit about that, I think, tomorrow.
We will. And I want to talk about sort of the first time I saw Bash and Pop as well. So I've seen them in both forms, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I love the question you had about comparing Paul Westerberg to Axl Rose, too, because I really can't think. I don't know. Initially, I'm thinking those are very different people, but, you know, they may not be in some ways.
Right. Right. It's interesting. Yeah. Both pretty driven.
Yes. All right. So you'll want to hear the rest of the interview tomorrow here on Rock in the Suburbs. You can find us on major podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Audio Boom and TuneIn.
Mm-hmm.
And also you should visit our website, which is suburbspod.com.
Yes, you should.
You can see some show notes and some other writings and musings that we have there. Also, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. All three of them search for Suburbs Pod. And and call the Suburban Party Line.
Yes, do that.
Which is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a party. It's
612-440-1984.
And we forgot to mention that, you know, this interview sets up nicely that you would want to listen how often?
Every day.
Every day.
Yes.
So don't forget to do that. Our thanks again to Tommy Stinson. Find more information about Bash and Pop and his various other projects at TommyStinson.com. And I thought maybe a good play out here, since Tommy mentioned his uncle-in-law, Chip Roberts, and some of the work he's doing with him in Cowboys in the Campfire. On the album Anything Could Happen, even though he talked about it being a true band, they recorded it as a band, although there are a number of different musicians who on the recordings. They're not the touring band, and I think some of them are, but what I'm saying is it's not just the same
That's right.
Four guys on each.
They kind of put it together with different musicians.
So Chip did play lead guitar on one song on Anything Could Happen. It is a song called Breathing Room.
Let's hear that.
Let's hear that. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're the pain in my ass. I'm the ache in your heart. You're the fist in my face. I'm the words you can't hear. You're the dream that I thought to die. And I'm the wish that won't come true. For the worst of our words, like a joke I won't tell.
If it gets any hotter in this booth.